Okay, yeah, welcome everybody to a very exciting program that really I want to just give a tremendous hakaras hatov right away when I had this idea that once we're already in our homes and unfortunately can't leave, it's a good idea to at least bring in some really well-known and renowned speakers from around the country. And all I really did was send a few emails and a few texts on Erev Shabbos and after Shabbos, and right away everybody came back saying, "Of course." I felt bad asking. Rabbis have been very, very busy, as everybody's been over these last few weeks. But the opportunity to really bring in other speakers, to hear other speakers, and to bring and uplift our Pesach was something that they were all very, very excited to do. Hold on one second. Okay, so I first want to just give a little introduction. We have about seven speakers tonight, each one sharing just a thought on the Haggadah. I want to thank our speakers, the Rabbi Schachter, Rabbi Weinberg, Rabbi Penner, Rabbi Greenland, Rabbi Moskowitz, Rabbi Bauman, Rabbi Schachter, which each will get their own introduction. As we say in the Haggadah, there's a major theme of the Haggadah is Hakaras HaTov. Whether that is through Arami Oviravi, through through the Psukim about Bikurim, through Karpas, as we've talked about in our shul. And it's really my Hakaras HaTov to my mentors and my Rebbeim, and as well as many of my Chaverim that have agreed to participate, that I want to just thank them in advance. So much of the Seder is about Talmidei Chachamim sitting around the tables. And I've been blessed to sit around the table with many great Poskim, Talmidei Chachamim, Rabbanim, and leaders. And for them to agree to just do this when everything has been so busy really just was very, very special to me. Our first speaker is Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter, one of my wonderful Rebbeim, who was our scholar in residence many, many years ago in our shul. He is the senior scholar of the YU Center for the Jewish Future and a professor of Jewish history, of Jewish thought. My own Rebbe as well as my teacher in Azrieli graduate school. So without further ado, Rabbi Schachter, who has been a tremendous resource for many Rabbanim in the last few weeks, I want to personally be Makir Tov to him for all of he's done to help us and give us chizuk, Rabbi Schachter.
I want to thank Rabbi Liebtag very much for the introduction, and even more so for the invitation to be able to join you. This is an incredibly genius idea to be able to bring different speakers together to be able to spend a few minutes with your community, and I commend you on it. I know that the clock is ticking, and I want to be very brief and stay within the confines of my time. My thought is as follows. I would like to suggest and invite each one of you to think about it, your Siddurim, that the night of Pesach is not just a night when we have different objects that represent different perspectives. The night of Pesach is the night of Avadam Ayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim, Vayotzieinu Hashem Elokeinu Misham. It's a night to do things to commemorate the fact that we were redeemed and that we went to a better place, that we were taken out of Mitzrayim. So on the same night, there are objects that represent the avdos and objects that represent the chayrus, and we do them both at the same night. Now, if you take the time and you open up a conversation and you have two columns, you have an avdos column and a chayrus column. So which object of the Seder goes into the avdos and which goes into the chayrus? But what I would like to suggest is I want to heighten the tension of this dialectic, and in fact argue that mamish, literally, every single object of the Seder is both avdos and chayrus, every single one of them. The charoses is both. The arba kosos is both. The matzah is both. Even maror, I'm prepared to say, is both. Heseba is both. And I want to just take one most obvious example, and that is matzah. The pasuk in Parshas Re'eh teaches us in Perek Tezayin, Lo socha lo lav matzos, lo socha lo lav chametz, shivas yamim tochal olav matzos lechemoni, ki bechi pozon yatzosa me'eretz Mitzrayim. So the very same pasuk that tells us we have an obligation to eat matzah refers to matzah in two different ways. First, eat matzah, which is lechem oni. Rashi, lechem shemaskir es ha'oni shenis anu, with an ayin, the suffering. It reminds us of the suffering. The first time we encounter matzah at the Seder, ha lachma anya, this is the bread of affliction. So that clearly belongs in the avdos column. And then in the same pasuk, the next word, ki b'chipazon yatzasa me'eretz Mitzrayim. Why are we eating matzah? It's so thin. Oh, because who had time for it to rise? We're leaving. We're done. We're out of here. Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's already a geula. We're in the middle of the journey of geula. Who has time for it to rise? So which column does the matzah go into? It's in the geula column. We're already holding a veg to leave Mitzrayim. And in fact, Rabbi Gamliel Haya Omer, later on in the Haggadah, why do we eat matzah zushan ochlem? Al shem shelo hispik b'tzeikam. So which is it? Which is it? Hello, everybody. Welcome to my Seder Halachma Anya, the bread of affliction. And then a little bit further along, it's we're leaving. Who has time for it to rise? Every single object of the Seder, without fail, is both. Why is it relevant to us today? Today, very much regretfully, we are holding in the Parsha of the Avdus. Today we're really overwhelmed by the uncertainty, by the recognition that we are not the masters of our own destiny. We used to think that we can decide that we are the masters, and we're not. The smartest among us, the wealthiest among us, we are not running the show. The Ribbono Shel Olam runs the show. What does it mean to be an Eved? That we're not in control. We feel the Avdus. But at the same time, we should also try as hard as it might be at the night of the Seder, to appreciate also the chayus. This Pesach will be different than any other Pesach. We're going to be alone. My wife and I are alone the first time ever. People will be couples. There'll be people who will be individuals. We're going to be alone. It'll be a different Seder. But as we feel the avdus, we should try to help ourselves, l'kavod yomtiv, to appreciate the brachas that we do have, to appreciate the family, even if they're not around us, to appreciate the health, hopefully, that we have, even though others are suffering and we care about them and we're desperately being mispalel for their welfare, to recognize simultaneously, just like on the night of Pesach, I'm feeling both avdos and cheres in the same object, because that is the human condition. This too is the way we can try to help ourselves, make ourselves in a position to not only be crushed and overwhelmed by the avdus, but to appreciate the brachos that we have, and we have brachos. Kadosh Baruch Hu should give us the capacity to do the best we can to be able to face this challenge and to emerge with a geula shalema b'mhera b'yamein.
Thank you very, very much, Rebbe. As Rabbi Schachter said, we're gonna move right on. Thank you very much, Rabbi Schachter, really for giving of your time and of your Torah to us. We're gonna move on to Rabbi Bram Weinberg. Rabbi Weinberg, very close. So one of my chaverim is the rabbi of a Ketmel synagogue in Silver Spring. He's very, very busy right now, but I want to really thank him for giving us some Torah tonight, Rabbi Weinberg.
Thank you so much. It's really an honor to participate in this very illustrious panel alongside my Rebbeim and my Chaverim. And really, Rabbi Liebtag is a tremendous friend and a fantastic rabbi. All of you are very fortunate to have him in your shul. We're all fortunate to have him in our lives. Bershus, my Rebbe, Rabbi Schachter, share a very brief idea that I think dovetails along the same lines as what Rabbi Schachter said, adding perhaps a little bit of a different twist. At the end of Magid, the Haggadah, of course, paraphrases the Mishnah and Pesachim of Rabban Gamliel, Kol Shelo Amar Shlosh Advarim Elu V'Pesach Lo Yatzo Yedecho Vaso. Whoever didn't mention the three core symbols of the Seder, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, did not fulfill their obligation of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim on the Seder night. When it comes to Matzah, as Rabbi Schachter mentions, the reason that Rabban Gamliel gives for why we eat Matzah at the Seder is Al Shum Shelo Hispik B'Tzeikam Shel Avoseinu L'Hachmitz. Because they left in such a hurry, their dough didn't have time to rise. Every child knows that reason already given by the Pasuk and reiterated by Rabban Gamliel. The reason we eat matzah is because we left in such a hurry. The Geula was so strong. Kadosh Baruch Hu took such great care of us, swept us out of Egypt so quickly that we didn't have time to let our bread rise. And there are many questions on this statement of Rabban Gamliel, and specifically on his comment about matzah. The question of why the Geula had to happen b'chipazon. The question of what exactly was the nature of the chipazon, the haste as they left, as the Gemara itself discusses, chipazon de Mitzrayim, chipazon de Bnei Yisrael, chipazon de HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What was the impetus for the chipazon as they left Egypt? The question Rabbi Shachter raised about the dialectic of the matzah itself. We start to say to Halach Ma'anya, it's poor man's bread, bread we ate in slavery. And now, of course, at the end, Rabban Gamliel says it's bread of geula, bread of freedom, and bread of redemption. But to me, the most perplexing question of all on Rabban Gamliel is, if the whole symbolism of matzah derives from the fact that as we left Egypt, the bread didn't have time to rise, how is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded the Jews in Egypt on the night before they left to eat matzah along with their Korban Pesach? A famous question, a perplexing question. I'd like to suggest just one answer tonight. The Avudram quotes an answer from Rabbi Yosef Kimchi, the father of the Radak, 12th century Spanish scholar. He says the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them to eat matzah on the night before they left, even though matzah didn't get its symbolism until the next day, when they left Egypt, b'chipazon, the reason was, Shema nitztavu al hamatzos kodem lachen haya al shem ha'asid. It was because of the future event that HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that moment already commanded them to eat the matzah. I think there's something tremendously powerful about this Avudram that resonates with me, especially this year. I think what the Avudram is suggesting is that a human being has the capacity sometimes to feel something of the future already in the present. The present might not be so bright. It might not be so perfect. But a human being has the capacity, through their emotion, through their mind, through their practice, through their connection to the Eternal One, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to jump over time and feel something of the future, a taste of the future, already now in the present. The reason it resonates with me so much this year is because, as Rabbi Shachter noted, this will be such a different Pesach for all of us. And not only in this moment should, as Rabbi Shachter said, we find our own chayrus and our own freedom, but we as human beings have to remember that this Pesach, we have the capacity to feel the beauty and the redemption of future Pesachs next year, the year after, ultimately in the time of Mashiach, already now in the present, and to bring that future right now, here into our present day, to give us a measure of comfort, a measure of encouragement, a measure of simcha, as we hopefully will have a truly wonderful Pesach together. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Weinberg, and thank you for taking the time. We're going to move now to Rabbi Menachem Penner, to Rabbi Penner, who of course was also one of our scholar in residences, and as well as the Dean of Reitz, more importantly, is my in-law's next-door neighbor, as the Rabbi Emeritus of the Young Israel of Hollywood, really one of my wonderful derbeim, who is in my head every time I write a drasha, literally, every time I write a drasha. So I want to thank Rabbi Penner for giving us a little bit of time tonight. Rabbi Penner.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Liebtag. I guess both Rabbi Shachter and I didn't get the memo about wearing a jacket and a tie in the middle of a magefa, but I see the younger Rabbanim have upped their game in terms of how to dress during this time. It is really wonderful to be able to be here, part of this this Scholar in Residence program, and to hear my Rebbeim, my colleagues, offer words of thought on the Pesach night. What a great introduction both Rabbi Weinberg and Rabbi Shachter gave to what I'm going to be talking about for just a moment. And that is, I'm going to choose to talk about Pesach. We know, of course, Rabbi Gamliel starts by telling us why we bring a Korban Pesach. The holiday is named Pesach. And that is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu Pasach, he Pasached over the homes of the Jews. And the question is exactly, what is it that he did? So you'll tell me, Rabbi, come on, you got to know that. That's the name of the holiday. The holiday is called Passover. And that is the translation of Pesach. But that's not necessarily so. There are two opinions in the Medrash. as to what exactly God did and what we're supposed to think and say when we talk about the holiday or when we talk about it in the Seder. Rabbi Yoshia Omer, Al Tikri Ufasachti Ela Upasati. Rabbi Yoshia said, don't read it as Pasachti. It's a very strange root. Read it as Pasati, which means to step, to take a step. And that's why we understand that it means to pass over. But Rabbi Yonason says, no, Pasachti means to have mercy upon. Have mercy upon. He had mercy on us. And they kind of jive. Just a question of exactly how to understand the words. But there's another way of understanding the word Pesach and understanding what Rabbi Yoshia is telling us. Rabbi Yoshia says it means to step. And we've always been told that it means to step over. But Rav Kook had a different understanding of this stepping. Because the Pasuk tells us, a famous Pasuk tells us by Eliyahu Hanavi, when he gathered the Jews together at Har Carmel, he said to the Jews who were stuck, they couldn't decide, should they worship the Baal or should they worship Hashem? And he said, Ad Masai, until when will you be poschim, same root, poschim al shtei haseifim? Will you kind of straddle the fence? How long are you going to step on both sides? When are you going to make up your mind? Is it going to be the Baal or is it going to be God? In that pasuk, Rav Kook points out, it's pretty clear that it doesn't mean to step over, but it means to step down. How long, Jewish people, will you continue to step on this one and then step on that one? Rely on the Baal and then rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rely on the Baal and then rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If the word pasati, to take a step, doesn't mean to pass over, but to step in. Maybe God didn't pass over the homes of the Jews. The fact is, we know what did pass over the home of the Jews, the mashkes. The plague passed over the homes of the Jews. What allowed the plague to pass? What made the plague have to pass, the Malach HaMavos have to pass over? Because God stepped in. He filled their homes. He came into their homes to protect them. Pesach doesn't mean that God passed over our homes. Chas v'shalom. We don't want him to pass over our homes. We want him to come into our homes, make them a place of holiness, make them a place that's safe from the dangers outside. Pesach means to invite God into our homes. And I hope we can feel that this year. There are going to be less people at our siddurim. And we're going to wonder, what are our siddurim really worth? Don't worry. God is coming into our homes. If there's an extra few seats at our table, it just means there's an extra few places for God. And the more that he is able to step into our homes, the more we pray that we'll be saved from the dangers outside. Chag Kasher, Bari, V'Sameach, and it's so good, wonderful to see all of you.
Thank you very, very much, Rabbi Penner. We'll move right along. We're going to go to Rabbi Micha Greenland. Rabbi Micha Greenland, I had to at least have one Chicago representative. Rabbi Micha Greenland is the International Director of NCSY and a wonderful colleague and chavi here in Chicago. Rabbi Greenland.
Thank you to Rabbi Liebtag, and thank you to everybody for joining tonight. And I'll echo what Rabbi Schachter said. This is a phenomenal idea. And on a night like tonight, we're all equally close. It doesn't matter that I'm maybe a mile and a quarter away from most of you, maybe a little closer to some of you, but when we're all on Zoom, we're all equally close. I want to just share what I always found to be an incredible insight into the Haggadah from Rav Soloveitchik, brought in the Haggadah Siach HaGrid. There's a portion of the Haggadah when we're exploring the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, where the Baal Haggadah suggests that Yachol Mirosh Chodesh. Perhaps you would think that we're supposed to begin this idea of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, of retelling of the Exodus from Mitzrayim, all the way from Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And Rav Soloveitchik asked the question, why would you think such a thing? There's no other mitzvah in the Torah that has a date attached to it where we say Yachol from a different date. The Torah itself says Bayomahu, on that day, on the day of the 15th of Nisan. So why would I possibly think we don't have that about Lulav and Esrog, that you might think you take it from Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, from Rosh Hashanah? We don't have it about any other mitzvah, ahava, I mean, a suggestion, a possibility that perhaps you would begin earlier, except with this mitzvah. And Rav Soloveitchik points out in answering this question that the Rambam relates the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, of retelling of the Exodus from Mitzrayim, to the mitzvah of remembering Shabbos each and every week. In fact, the Rambam, this is in Perek Zayin Halacha Aleph of Hilchos Chametz Matzah, the Rambam says, mitzvah saseh shel Torah, we have a positive commandment from the Torah, l'saper, to tell over benisim v'niflaos shenaasu la'avoseinu b'mitzrayim, to tell over the wonders and the miracles that happened to our forefathers in Egypt, b'lil chamisha asar b'nisan shenamar, that happened on the 15th of Nisan, as the Pasuk says, Zachor es hayom hazeh asher yitzaseh mitzrayim, remember that day that you left Egypt. Kemoshen Amar, Zachor es yom haShabbos l'kadsho. As it says, remember the Shabbos day and keep it holy. Zachor es yom haShabbos. Why does the Rambam see the need to relate the mitzvah of remembering the Exodus to the mitzvah of remembering the Shabbos? So the Rav Soloveitchik points out that there are many reasons for this, but one of them perhaps is just like the mitzvah of Shabbos, the Zachor es Yom HaShabbos is fulfilled not only on Shabbos itself through making Kiddush, but it's fulfilled all week. The Ramban al HaTorah points this out, and this is actually the opinion of Beis Shammai in the Gemara, but that all week long we're supposed to remember Shabbos. When you see something nice on Wednesday, you buy it for Shabbos. When you find something that would be beautiful to wear, you buy it for Shabbos on Thursday, on Friday, the whole week. You're remembering Shabbos by doing things that are active for Shabbos. I'd like to add to this that not only is Zachor telling us to remember the whole week, but it's also reminding us that we're supposed to do it with action. Just like remembering Shabbos is not just done cognitively in our minds, but remembering Shabbos is done actively by making Kiddush, so too the mitzvah of Zachor es Yom HaZeh Asher Yetzasa Mitzrayim, remembering the Exodus, is not just done passively, but is done actively. So Rav Soloveitchik explains, the reason why you might think that you do the mitzvah from Rosh Chodesh Nisan is because Zachor requires us to remember not just in the moment, but in the entire period leading up to the moment. Just like on Shabbos, we don't just remember Shabbos one day a week, we remember it all week leading up to Shabbos. So too with Pesach, you would think, perhaps we don't just remember it that night, but the entire period leading up to that night. So I would like to suggest that this year especially, there are two things that this lesson teaches us. Number one, that the preparation is key. That even though the halacha is we only fulfill the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim on Pesach night, but this idea of Zachor, of remembering even in advance for preparation purposes, we may not paskin that we're supposed to fulfill Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim the whole month, but preparation is key. So you're already halfway there, right? You're already accomplishing that by being on Zoom tonight, preparing for the Seder in an active way is incredible. And you're already fulfilling that mantra of Zachor. And the other message I believe that Zachor is trying to impart is to do it actively, not just to think about fulfilling the mitzvah, but to actually fulfill an action related to performing the mitzvah. That's what Soloveitchik is telling us by pointing to this part of the Rambam where he connects Zachor es Hayom HaZeh Asher Yetzasa Mitzrayim to Zachor es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. Remembering is not just done in our minds, but remembering is done by taking action. And that's what we'll do, God willing, on Wednesday night. We'll take action. We'll fulfill through all the other mechanisms that everybody tonight has been focusing on. We'll call attention to this commemoration through the action that we take. By so doing, God willing, we should be zoche to bring the geula that much closer. Thank you, Rabbi Liebtag, again.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Greenland. Thank you very much for that beautiful idea. We'll continue to move on now. We're going to go to Rabbi Phil Moskowitz. Rabbi Moskowitz is the associate rabbi of Boca Raton Synagogue, one of the most amazing places to be, and is a very, very close chaver and colleague of mine. And it's really an honor that Rabbi Moskowitz, who was running a 900-family, 1,000-family shul and community, takes a few minutes. So thank you, Rabbi Moskowitz.
Thank you, Rabbi Liebtag. It's a great schus, as so many of the speakers have mentioned, to be on this most prestigious panel. I feel a little bit like it's my bar mitzvah with Rabbi Penner and Rabbi Schachter listening. So the jitters, the nerves that a bar mitzvah boy feels, certainly how I feel. It's a great kavod, a great honor to speak in front of the two of you and in front of so many close chaverim. I know for me growing up, and certainly now as a parent, one of the sweetest and really most magical and remarkable parts of the entire Seder night is the recitation of the Manishtana. And as a child growing up, and even with my children now, it pretty much follows the same exact routine, which is that the child gets up on a chair, they're nervous, they're sheepish, they look around, their siblings are making them laugh. Then they either look at their parents and grandparents and ask for some help in getting started. And it's really one of the most beautiful moments filled with nachas that exists at the Seder night. But as Rabbi Schachter referenced, for many, this year is going to be a little bit different. And many people are not going to be with their children, with their grandchildren. They're going to be alone for the Siddurim. And so the question is, in halacha, what does that look like? What does this most remarkable moment of the Seder look like, absent any small children getting up on a chair? And so the halacha is clear that even if there are no children, a person still has to ask the question to anyone else at the Seder table. And if there's no one else at the Seder table, says the halacha, then you actually have to ask the Manishtana to yourself. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Vim Lav, if there's no one else who shoel as Atma, you actually have to ask yourself the questions of the Manishtana. And the question is so obvious and so simple. Why is Manishtana so important that an adult sitting by him or herself at a Seder table has to actually talk to themselves, ask themselves questions that they already know the answers to? We don't have that halacha anywhere else. You don't have halacha that if you're chas v'shalom alone for Rosh Hashanah, then you have to sing dip the apple in the honey to yourself. Right? We don't have halacha anywhere that if you're by yourself chas v'shalom for Simchas Torah, that you have to take the little flag and you have to wave it as you're dancing around a Sefer Torah. Why is it solely when it comes to Manishtana that we have to ask ourselves questions that we already know the answers to? Now, the truth is, this isn't the only thing that we do different at the Seder night. We know that we do many things that look different at the Seder night from all other nights. For example, we bring out the matzah and then we cover it. We wash our hands for karpas. We don't make a bracha on it. We pour a cup of wine and we don't drink it for another 2 hours. There are a lot of very strange things that we do at the Seder night. And the Rambam takes all of them. He combines them together under basically one header. And he calls that Sarech Lasos Shinoi. Balayla Hazeh, that the whole goal of the Seder night is changing the way that we do things. That as human beings, you and I are creatures of habit. That if I do something on Tuesday, chances are I'm going to do the exact same thing on Wednesday and the exact same thing on Thursday. And so comes along the Seder night, and it encourages us to break those habits and to form new routines. That Manishtana isn't simply something nice that children sing, but it's actually the epicenter of the entire Seder, because it's about asking ourselves, how is this night going to be different from all of my other nights? It's encouraging us to make Tuesday night different from Wednesday night and different from Monday night. It's making sure that our nights and days don't simply blend one into another, but that we make shinoi in our lives, to recognize our capacity to break those habits and to shape those new routines. I want to share with you one last idea. This one blew my mind away. And I promise you, you'll remember it at the Seder night. It comes from the Vina Rav, Rav Asher Anshel Katz, who asks a very obvious question. Why do we have round matzahs at the Seder night? And he answers by quoting a pasuk in Tehillim. It's from Perek Yud Beis of Tehillim, where the very end of the perek, it says, Saviv Rishaim Yishalach, that the wicked people go round and round in circle. And while all the Mefarshim offer their different interpretations, says the Vina Rav something astounding. He says, you want to know the definition of a rasha? They get caught in a cycle of behavior and mindless routine. You see, generally, when someone goes on a journey, he begins from a certain point and he has an end game. He has a goal in mind. But a person who walks around and around in a circle ends nowhere. That, says the Vina Raviv, Saviv Rishaim Yisalachun, the mindless activity of the Rasha. They get caught in their habits, in their routines, doing the same things day in and day out. But says the Vina Rav, what do we do with the round matzah at the Seder night? We break it in half. In the moment we break the matzah in half, we show ourselves that we can break any cycle of behavior. That just because I ate the chocolate cake yesterday, and doesn't just because I ate the chocolate cake the day before, doesn't mean I have to eat the chocolate cake tomorrow. And just because I haven't worked out for the last 3 days doesn't mean I can't start working out tomorrow. But you and I, when we break the matzah at the Seder night, when we make shinui in our lives, it shows us that we have the capacity to break behaviors and to form new routines. And so, like breaking the matzah at the Seder night, habits and routines don't have to be our destiny, but they can be changed and they can be broken. And whether we control our habits or our habits control us might just determine how free you and I truly are.
Beautiful. Thank you, Rabbi Moskowitz. I should just point out that if there we won't be shul this Pesach, but if there was going to be shul, definitely my drasha would have been ripped off from number one of these speakers that are here today. So now that they're sharing it, it's as if I was giving it. But thank you very much, Rabbi Moskowitz. We're going to move on. We had two more. We're going to welcome Rabbi Shalom Baum. Shalom Baum is the rabbi of Keter Torah in Teaneck, as well as where I worked as an intern many, many years ago. Everything that is successful in Keter Torah is probably due to my 7 months there. I don't want to take all the credit, but Rabbi Baum.
You do get a lot of credit. I'll start off on a little bit of a different perspective. I think it's very important this year when we're sitting at the Seder, whether we're with ourselves, whether we're only with our spouses, maybe with only 2 out of 6 of our children, that we do not say to those that are sitting with us, I wish Yonkel Beryl, I wish your brother was here, I wish your sister was here, I wish my mother was here, my grandchildren were here. We should remember that this is not Yisker night. We are doing this year, so we don't have to say Yisker for these individuals. And that's the Elia Rabbah based on a Ravan. When we say Kol Dichvin Yesev Yifsach, we're talking to the people who are at the table. The door's already closed. It's too late to invite people in. We want the people at the table this year to feel how special they are. They're the most special. Take the negativity and keep it outside. If you're going to speak about Corona at the Seder, outside. The Seder, this year especially, is about positivity. Now, I think it should be like that every year. We defeat the dialectic. We're positive. Maskil Bignus is the matir, and then we go on to a positive way. I didn't make this up. This is what the Gra says. The Gra is aware of the Ramah, who said that the egg on the table is Zecher l'Churban. And the Gra said, Chas v'Shalom. Zecher l'Churban, this is not Tisha B'Av. It's Zecher l'Chagiga. The Imre Shefer said people are talking about kittels being a sign of death. This year, God forbid, I would ever say a kittel is a sign of death or the need of humility. We're dealing with death every single day. Ask any rabbi on this phone. This year, especially, the kittel is a sign of big day kahuna. Look at the Imre Shefer. The Rabbeinu Manoach, so many people quote the Rabbeinu Manoach who says, we're dipping in the karpas because the brothers threw Yosef into the pit. Chas v'shalom. Leave that outside, especially this year. You know what the Rabbeinu Manoach says right afterwards? But no one quotes the Rabbeinu Manoach. Karpas is the sign of the ancient flower crown. It's what victors wear. This is victory night. So let's remember the people that are sitting with us this year. And maybe we're sitting by ourselves. And then you have to look at the Sharansky film, who says no Jew is alone. We're with other people, and we're going to call our grandmothers. We're going to call my children, and I'm going to call my 85-year-old mother who's not coming this year, and my son and my daughter-in-law, and we're going to say, the reason you're not coming is because we love you so much. And we're going to make sure you have a great Yom Tov, and we have a great Yom Tov, and we'll leave Yisker for the last days. This Pesach is going to be the greatest Pesach with the people sitting with us at the table.
Thank you very much, Rabbi. Okay, the final speaker for tonight, before I just conclude with just 1 minute of thought after Rabbi Shai Schechter, we'll go to right now. Rabbi Shai Schechter, of course, is the Rosh Beis Medrash Hillel Yisrael Wudmir. He's a well-known speaker, was just in Chicago not that long ago, giving a shiur in Or Torah, as well as the Rav and leader of Yachad and many, many other roles. So it's really, really an honor that Rabbi Shai Schechter is joining us. Rabbi Schechter.
Thank you, Rabbi Liebtag, and it's really a great kavod to be a part of this pre-Pesach discussion. You know, many have a custom that on Pesach night, they recite Shir HaShirim after the conclusion of the Seder. And that is obviously the custom when we are in Shul, when we say Shir HaShirim on Shabbos Chol HaMoed Pesach as well. And this is something to think about. It's something to consider. When we talk about Shir HaShirim, it's much of a description of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of everything that we feel, our connection, our closeness, our bond with the Ribono Shel Olam, with God Himself. So there's a very striking line where we make a request and we ask God, Mi tencha ke'achli, when will you, God, treat us like brothers? Which the Medrash already finds to be a very startling comment, because which set of brothers are we dealing with? If you look through Sefer Bereishis, there are many sets of brothers that didn't seem to go off too well, Cain and Hevel, Yaakov and Esav, and you go through all the different sets of brothers, Yosef and his brothers, didn't really turn out too well. And finally, the Medrash writes that what we ask for is that we should be in a relationship with God that is one of Moshe and Aaron, such respect and such love, such understanding and camaraderie. That's what we look forward to in our relationship with God. But the Baal Shem Tov asks a very simple question, and that is, if we want to highlight this highest level of understanding and love and caring and connection that we have with God Himself, why is it that we sell ourselves short? We all know that the closest bond one will ever have is with a spouse. So why do we ask that God treat us like brothers? Siblings love each other. But a spouse obviously has a much deeper connection, a much more a greater understanding than perhaps siblings ever will have for each other. And the Baal Shem Tov gives two interpretations, and I'm only going to share one because I really want to stick to the time here. I'd like to hear Rabbi Liebtag as well. So the Baal Shem Tov writes a very beautiful insight, and that is, he says, the nature of the sensitive love that exists between a husband and wife is such that they are not allowed to exhibit their most precious love to each other in public. They have to reserve that for their private room, for their private confines, for their own home. It's not unusual for brothers to show their love out in public, to embrace and to show the extent of their appreciation for each other with other people watching. There would be no violation of their love to do that in public. And therefore, writes the Baal Shem Tov, we all know in the depths of our hearts how much God loves us, how much God is always there to save the Jewish people and to do whatever is necessary. Ki lo yitosh Hashem amo, God has made a promise from the outset that he will never, ever neglect his people. However, we ask God, we don't just want to know it in the depths of our hearts. We don't just want to know this in a private setting. We ask, Mi yitencha ke'achli, writes the Baal Shem Tov, when will you, God, treat us like brothers and go out in front of the entire world and unmask this beautiful love that you have for the Jewish people? When will come the time when all the nations of the world will see how much you have this unbridled love for your people, for the Am HaNivchar? And that is so much what we ask for. As together we struggle in all that we think about, it's a challenge for all of humanity and not in particular for the Jewish community. But this is a time to think for ourselves as well. There's so much talk about Mashiach, about Geula. It's all wonderful. It's all beautiful. But it's also a time to think about what it means to be the Am Segula, to be the chosen nation. What does it mean to have a relationship with God? What does it mean that we look forward to a Geula? What is that supposed to mean to us? What does God mean to the Jewish people? And what do the Jewish people, more importantly, mean to God Himself? And this is so much of what we think about, so much of what we ask for. As we struggle this year to ask all of the questions, more so than the regular Manishtana that we ask on a regular Seder night, let's think this year about the words of Shir HaShirim as well, about the deep-seated love that God has always had for His people, and the love that we in turn are supposed to have for Him. Chag Sameach to all of you.
I want to thank all the Rabbanim. You know, now I feel bad because when I emailed them originally, I said, you could just stay on for the 5 minutes. You don't really have to stay the entire time. And now they all stay the entire time. So I don't want to keep them any longer. I just want to first, tremendous thank you. It means so much to me that you agreed. It means so much that you came on and shared some Torah. And it means so much that we have what a Chevreshaft and Rebbeim and Chaverim. I'll just end with one story really about a person who was also alone at the Seder. If you read the book, Letters to Talia, about the beautiful book, about the letters that Dov Indig writes to a secular girl on a kibbutz, on a very, very secular kibbutz, and this Hezer Yeshiva, how he changes her life in a published book called Letters to Talia. He unfortunately is killed in the Yom Kippur War. But he tells in one of his letters that he was on guard duty for Pesach, and after he had a few minutes as he was getting ready, and he tells her that, you can imagine, I was celebrating Pesach at a spot and I was looking out on the Red Sea and I could see the Sinai expanses, and it was a special experience. And I had a few minutes in the middle of the Seder, I had a brief stint of guard duty. On the horizon, I could see the ships on the Red Sea. And with a bit of imagination, I could see the children of Israel crossing the dry land within the sea, the water as a wall to the right and to the left. And I came back to the dining room. And I sang the songs of Exodus with greater joy and gratitude to Hashem than I'd ever felt in my life. What a privilege it is to live in a generation in which the Jews have returned and can see the divine promises fulfilled. One of the aspects of the Seder of Pesach itself is obviously the Kriyas Yamsuf. And one of the questions that we don't often ask is, how in the world, even once it splits, how do the Jews not know that once they walk in, it's going to come crashing down on them? How do they not know that the moment they're halfway through, the walls of the water would come back down on them and drown them? And Rabbi Rimon suggests they didn't know. One of the things the Jews gained at the Yam Suf was feelings of uncertainty. And in those moments of uncertainty is where we gain great perspective about Emunah. That often at times of more confusion, we learn about who we are. What the Jews learned at the Yam Suf was that we do find ourselves in conditions of uncertainty. And we have to be reminded that the road to redemption is full of ups and downs. And the Jews understood that it's a process. That's what Dayenu is about, being Makir Tov at every step. It's what a lot of the Seder is about. It's why the Jews can't go straight to Eretz Yisrael. It's why I remember when I believe Rabbi Weinberg and I snuck in to hear Rabbi Schachter, maybe almost 20 years ago. We snuck in. We weren't smicha students yet. We snuck in to hear him when he quoted the Medrash that Moshe Rabbeinu says, send Eliyahu HaNavi. But at the Yam Suf, the Jews learn that everything is a process. And in those moments is where they gain that great level of Emunah. And Dov Indig writes to Talia in that same letter. He sang to her a song from the 1956 Sinai campaign, which was turned into a war anthem called Mul Har Sinai. And he says, it's no dream, my friend. It's no dream, my friend. No legend, if you will. Because at Mount Sinai, the bush is burning still. And he says, the guys in the dining room looked at him. They said, you've gone nuts. What happened to you? But I persevered. And in the end, they all joined me. And at the last line of the tale shall be told of the return of the nation back to the Sinai revelation, the walls of our dining room were trembling. I literally had a feeling of being at the Sinai revelation of the Shechina being revealed. This is what we'll gain at our Seder. Based on everybody's thoughts, whether they're from Rabbi Gamliel to Shir HaShirim, to being positive, to the dialectic at the Seder, to the idea of Rabbi Soloveitchik, everything we do at the Seder is to be positive, is to bring us to a newfound level of Emunah, whoever it may be. I charged my students this week, I said to them, every one of them had a different Seder than they were supposed to. And I told them, you're in charge. You're going to fill the room with whatever needs to be. You're going to make one of the most remarkable and memorable Sedarim, because that's moments of confusion, uncertainty. That's where we find moments of revelation. So I want to thank my wonderful Rabbeim and my Chaverim for joining on this call, for being really, really easy to just say yes and to not just hop on, but to stay for an hour. So to Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter, Yasher Koach, Rabbi Weinberg, a big Yasher Koach, Rabbi Penner, a thank you, and to Rabbi Greenland, a thank you, Rabbi Moskowitz, a big thank you, Rabbi Baum, and to Rabbi Shai Schachter. All of these Rabbeim are so busy, especially this year. But I want to thank you for your time, and wish I can unmute everyone. So everybody, can wish everybody a chag kosher v'sameach.